Everybody knows my name. Now I've got fortune and fame. Remember life when it was plain. Just getting by without the game. On the road or on the stage, it seems so good till you turn the page.
Welcome to Be Simply. This is Sheehan. I want to thank you for joining us today. We have special guest Thomas Artavani. He is a teacher of the Artavani approach. He is also an actor, writer, director. And today we're going to have a conversation that circles around the art of imagination. Without further ado, let's dive in with Thomas.
Thomas, I want to thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you here to share your wisdom. I wanted to dive into the art of imagination and where that can take us in our personal lives and in the outer world that we're experiencing.
Wow, that's it. That's all. That's it. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. What a great subject matter, and so relative and so important to this day and age, because improper use of imagination is an unfortunate aspect of our day to day, moment to moment existence. To understand actually how to utilize the aspect of ourselves responsibly can determine the difference between success and failure, happiness and misery, and just about everything else that we do in our lives. Imagination is typically a wonderful tool to pilot a hole into the possibilities of what can be if used responsibly. It's such an abused mechanism, because it can take us down a dark road, and it can also be used to pull us out of the dark road, off the dark road, into the light. So where would you like to begin? it's so beautifully vast, but such a relevant thing to bring up. I'm so glad you mentioned that. In the arts, a certain understanding of this mechanism is absolutely essential if we're to create for other people, because they need us to perform or to create when they need us to. So for the performing artist to have a control of this mechanism to create conscientious results is an absolute necessity. Which is why, gosh, all of these performing arts and all of the arts are so darn relevant to the quality of our understanding of how to get through a day peacefully, you know? Because when we look at the artist and the expectations and requirements put on them by an audience, we pay for these results that they give us. And they make us feel the way that we think they should make us feel, we think that's magical. To bring that very powerful tool that the artist uses conscientiously into a civilian's day-to-day understanding is, wow, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful.
So,
Where do you want to start? Should we just get right down to doing lessons and understanding how to
lead you.
Use our day-to-day existence to immediately start to go to work and to understand the difference between proper use of imagination and improper use of imagination. Is that sort of where you'd like to go?
Well, I'll lead you there.
Leave me here. Don't leave me.
Lead you, not leave you.
Oh, I thought you said leave me. Oh, don't leave me here.
lead you. So,
is that scary already? Jeez.
No.
Okay, we'll leave you there. Thank you very much, Thomas. Nice talking to you.
Oh, my. What I would like to transition to within imagination, within the context of imagination, something that you just brought up was responsibility. And in using and enduring the creation process and even the life process, how we can weigh in with responsibility as we start to shape and mold even the thoughts in our mind, what we're creating on a piece of paper or on the screen or in a bed of music, the importance of that and what the outcome can yield when it's considered.
Well, if we don't understand or appreciate the profound subtlety of the mind and understand that every thought manifests itself in the body somewhere, every single one, if we can't verify that particular concept, it'll be hard to look at the responsibility that we have to allowing our perceptions to go through a particular gateway that allows us to see things as we need to achieve what we want to. And there's a couple of things that that we need to understand in order before we can even begin to get control of this extraordinary mechanism that allows us to manifest, but it also allows us to destroy and to understand how to see through a pair of eyes that can discern one from the other is absolutely essential. But just I think a good place to start with this very vast subject matter, which could go on for weeks. I guess this interview is only several minutes long. It's absolutely essential to, first of all, be able to understand where one is in time and space. Somehow have a reference point for objective reality. Because when you start dealing with the imagination, which is in my opinion, in the society, it's an abused tool. When you're dealing with such mental health issues that this country has, hundreds of millions, ironically, the 109 million people we have on welfare almost mirrors the number of people we have on antidepressants. And to me, those two facts indicate that we have a problem with our imaginations. We have a problem at the gate to perceive things as we need to maintain our health and our well-being.
Absolutely.
For me, both of those problems can be addressed with a central meeting point or a central understanding about where one actually is in a given time and place. Everything in our society is seemingly geared to take us away from where we are and to not allow us to appreciate the subtleties of what's actually happening and the fruitful reality that we actually exist in. So with that, this beginning to understand the imagination can happen because it needs a counterbalance, because we're so immersed in our thoughts and our wants and our needs and what our fears and our desires that the mind seems to be just running roughshod over what is in a lot of cases. And
right.
So it's really starting with what is allows us the ability to begin to perceive the imagination as a mechanism as opposed to what we think that we are. Most of us correlate our imaginations to ourselves as opposed to a separate entity that functions within the body, mind, and the spirit. And so with that, there's, and that's a whole subject in itself, but you have basic meditative repose, you have all of these extraordinary practices that invite us to just come back to where we are, whether we're just sitting in a room quietly. And when I work with the on-camera artists, one of the things that I do is I teach performing artists. And in order to allow them to be effective or to be in balance with themselves in relation to the world around them, I simply ask them to observe the fact that the body is breathing. And it's important to discern breathing with observing the fact that the body is breathing. A lot of meditation classes that I've seen and even on tape, they make reference to just simply breathing as opposed to observing breath. And so if our audience is listening, why don't we just observe the fact that our bodies are breathing just for a few moments?
Okay.
So we can even begin to understand what's going to come next. Because I can tell you, the imagination is flying along on the journey of, it's going to be a tremendous amount of obfuscation going down between wanting to see the imagination and wanting anything to do with the present moment. Because a lot of times it's tremendously frightening to realize that we are not our thoughts. And these thoughts and these likes and these dislikes that we feel make us what we are, at least the idea of ourselves, become immediately threatened with the idea that I'm not what I thought I was. And the imagination runs with that because everything that we think that we are has been created by this mechanism of imagination. So the way in is through the student or the artist to come to grips with that first. And, you know, if the person is talented, they will go to it like a fish to water, meaning they're seeking that level of freedom. They're seeking that level of satisfaction. They're seeking that result that they realize that an audience will respond to. So we can kind of gear talent to how much resistance there is to the present moment. If there's a natural affinity for the present moment, we can say that that individual is talented. If there's a tremendous resistance and a huge fight to even attempt to separate or to have a certain level of appreciation for the mechanism that creates this idea of what we think everything is, then we can say that person is not very talented. But fortunately, if they are persistent enough and determined enough, regardless of how far away from the truth that they are, they can work through it. They can if they persist and they practice, and they can eventually begin to develop this other part of themselves that is the part that's overseeing all the noise. It's the part that oversees, the part that takes control of the body and makes us feel like we're in panic mode and therefore we need to take these horrible drugs that give us a moment of reprieve from all of that noise. So that's first.
Okay. So,
So let's just take 30 seconds.
Okay, and we're going to breathe.
And I know that, no, see what you said? We're going to breathe. Fortunately, you don't have a choice in that. Because if it was left up to the mind, it would forget to breathe and we'd die. So, by observing breath, we're observing the organism in its current state in relation to everything else. So it's observing breath. Observing breath. So let's just do that for 30 seconds. And of course, you know, you're a sound editor here. You can cut this out if this is way too laborious for the audience to even begin to digest, but it's a little thing. So let's observe just for 30 seconds. Thank you. observe. Tendency maybe to control the breath. If that's the case, try to let that go and observe the body and its condition. Okay, so let's just acknowledge where we are and try not to snap out of it, but maintain possibly the subtlety of relaxation. Try to maintain maybe a sense of heightened perception around you. And with those two aspects, relaxation and perception, we can take responsibility for the quality of where we are in a given moment in time. And so with that type of an exercise, repeated as much as possible throughout the day, we can develop another sense of what is, because if it's practiced enough, the thoughts will recede. A nice balance between the organism and the world around it will begin to occur. The senses will enter into the canvas of the circumstances that are surrounding, and we'll start to achieve and find a balance. Perspective will be attained and retained. And at this point, this moment is under our control. And from this place, the imagination can be observed, appreciated, and used to facilitate whatever activity or goals that one would want to have in their life. One can also observe that with the imagination, and in its relationship to negativity or to stress, you must have the imagination involved if you are stressed. If you are expressing negativity, the imagination has to be involved. So by having the ability to observe that, you don't have to be so identified with these particular feelings or give them too much attention, simply because they're controlled by the imagination. And because of the imagination and our association with what we like or don't like or what we feel is right or wrong, we don't have to be a slave to that. We don't have to be limited to our current ideas. We can see things through a fresh pair of eyes and discern the objective reality of what's actually going on, which typically is not what we think is going on. Wow. Right? So, too much. So let's simplify.
Wait, pause.
If we exist here long enough, we will discern who we are from our imagination. Right? And now the work begins in terms of properly using the imagination. There's two things that are really beautiful about our bodies in relation to the world around it, is that they're constantly communicating to each other. They're constantly receiving information and putting information out and assessing. We have this beautiful ability to, with our awareness, to assess where we are in a given time and place. We have the ability to direct our attention through suggestion. We have the ability to set ourselves up to feel the things that we want to feel. we have the ability to think the things that we would like to think, do the things we want to do if we have the ability to direct our imagination. And typically, with that level of discipline, we call that freedom. We have freedom at that point. Without the ability to direct the imagination, we are enslaved instantaneously to our suggestions, which can take on a negative connotation. Proper use of imagination is another concept. Proper use of imagination clearly is here to help us maintain our freedom.
Absolutely. Yeah? For the listeners right now, beautiful way to lead us to being here and objectively observe reality and what is. If you can share with the listeners, because you work in the creative arts, and they might be like, what does this guy do? A little wondering. If you can share a little bit about the parallel metaphor of being on a screen or on a stage and life, and how no different if you step into a part, that you can do that same thing in everyday life and be the guide of your own ship that you are leading and meet what meets you depending on what the outcome you would like to have.
Well, in the arts we have, what we don't have in life is the responsibility of recreating a moment. So as a singer or an actor on stage or an actor in front of a camera or a dancer, we're asked to recreate the forms that have been laid out for us by the writers and the actors and the directors and the producers and the choreographers. So it's, the onus is on the artist to recreate an experience for an audience. In life, it's a linear progression. We're not typically asked to go back and recreate. Unless we're going to work and we have a series of tasks that the institution has laid out before us that we have to redo every day to keep that big machine going, then we're asked to go back and you know, face similar tasks and execute to attain a similar result. Otherwise, we probably won't have that job if we're not able to get the results that the institution needs. But I wanted to add one more thing to this imagination that I was trying to get to in spite of myself before we plow ahead into the arts, which to me is most people are not in the arts. Most people are trying to get through their day in a way that's healthy, from what I can perceive anyways, or be happy, or to be to have a feel like they have a purpose here other than their 9-to-5, or other than their families, or other than even their religion, that there's somehow a broader reason for us to be here. But this concept of proper use of imagination leads us to two conditions, a state called inner presence, and then we have, of course, presence or external presence. And inner presence, this is what the artist, performing artist, develops to a high degree, the great ones, is that they develop this condition of inner presence. Inner presence is the alignment of the imagination with the body. This allows an artist, whether they're an athlete or whether they're whatever art that they happen to be in, it allows them to prepare their bodies, their minds, and their spirits for the actual endeavor that will manifest physically. So when the imagination is lined up with the body, we can take the body on a journey based on any suggestion that we give the imagination. Mm-hmm. Now, this is happening all day long anyways. We are reactive to what we see in our mind's eye. We're doing this mechanically. anyways. But when you make this very powerful alignment conscientious, you can begin to understand how to realize your innate potential by aligning the imagination with the body conscientiously, with the creative mind or the visual mind. And, you know, people are going to want to put this in the same category as visualization. It is visualization. It is the preparation that the great athletes go through. It is the great preparation that the great actor goes through in terms of developing his characters. Shape-shifting requires this very powerful connection between the imagination and the body. And this is actually tapping into the potential of the brain to physiologically ask the body to adapt to whatever is going on around it. So that's inner presence. And this, to any creative endeavor, to any great thinker, to anything that precedes the word great, they have this control over this mechanism. And it's a really beautiful thing to develop. You know, there's so many exercises over the years that I've been teaching to convey this particular concept to my listening audience or my learning audience or my aspiring group of artists audience. There's so many simplistic, wonderful exercises. Just right down from seeing your own hand in your imagination and taking direction from the imagination, seeing your hand and watching the hands in your imagination, and allowing your actual hand to track the imaginary hand through space. Something as simple as that allows for the connection, the conscientious connection between the individual who wants to strengthen this particular tool. It's really important in the society to exercise those muscles of inner presence, because so much is given to us visually from the outside that this mechanism of visualization or aligning imagination with the body is done through the computer screen or through our phones or through our televisions and through all this visual feedback that we're getting continually. That's one thing, inner presence. The ultimate inner presence is the ultimate proper use of imagination, which requires an individual that has enough integrity or that has enough will built up in them to maintain their freedom long enough to utilize this tool. Discipline and freedom are very close relatives. You can't have freedom without the discipline, simply because you won't have access to gateways or doorways into the potential of your mind without it. And that's simply developed through the initial exercise that we set up. That's inner presence. Outer presence is our ability to sit with the body in relation to the environment around it objectively. And so between the inner presence, the balance between the inner presence, use of the imagination, the inner world, to the outer world, utilizing the actual senses, the external senses that we have to receive a clear picture of what is. This inner world, so we bounce between these two worlds, developing this particular strength, which eventually allows us to reach our creative potential. And understanding through any suggestion that we give ourselves, immediately we begin to take on the form that's being suggested. Ha! I said it. There.
Woo. Beautiful.
Woo. Okay, I just said that. Somehow it came out.
So now.
What was your next question relative to the performing artist in relation to life in the big stage and the small stage?
Yeah, so...
So what was the specific lead into that?
I'll speak it again. And you gave a great lead in, and thank you for wrapping that all together. So you said something that, you know, the actor or the creator has a responsibility to recreate a moment, a form. And in life, we maybe don't
feel that we have that same responsibility because we're living out this potentially perceived spontaneous experience. However, if you can share, you know, this is our screenplay of life that we've written long before we got to here. And just as if you read a line off a script, there's a multitude of ways that you could articulate that expression. So if you can share with the listeners, whether you're in the performing arts or just walking around here on planet Earth, how you can really harness what is in a moment and play it out the way that you deeply desire in your heart.
Well, would you want to connect it to the world of acting, or do you want to connect it to what medium would you like to explore with that?
Well, from my perspective, it's all the same. But you can do whatever you like.
Well, hopefully when we're done here, it won't be all the same for you.
I understand.
That's only because our current scripts may have been laid out for us through whatever means, and whatever's going to happen is. But what's interesting about becoming conscious within your art is that it's now up to you.
Of course.
As opposed to the law of accident, let's say.
No.
Now all
I'm
of a sudden we can say.
Let me clarify. Cause and effect.
Please.
Cause and effect has created this moment. This moment that we're actually having right now. Within that moment, if we're on stage and we pick up the script that resulted by a series of multitude of infeeds, we have the opportunity to choose how we want that to play out. In everyday life, it's the same thing. A multitude of things fed into that moment, and we have a choice. So if we want to harness what is in that moment and flow with it from there, with presence, inner presence, outer presence, how would you guide the listener, the creator, to harness that moment with their full potential?
Well, this is an interesting concept. There's so many. All action is abstract. That's one of the more advanced concepts that make the performing arts what they are and allows a great performer to keep seemingly bringing it night after night or day after day to a set or to the stage or whatever, to wherever it is they got to bring it to, whether they're doing the public speaking or whatever it is. But all action is abstract. And that simply means that what's motivating what we say and do is unique to the individual. So in these performing arts, there's a result or outline or structure that's laid out for the artist to attempt to fit into. But it's just an outline. It's just a structure. They fill in like the skeleton of a body. It's covered with all sorts of wonderful things to make us appear the way that we are and maintain the vitality that makes us human, right? So when there's a show and there's a script and it's just a big outline, and there's a particular expectation from the audience to feel a certain way once that moment on stage has been conveyed. I have a particular type of an expectation. So the performers and the production has a particular responsibility to bring that feeling to the audience each night or each time you show up on a set, to bring that life up through that text and into that space of the audience is interested in following along with whatever random story that might be being told. And if you can understand all action being abstract, simply meaning that I get out of bed differently for different reasons than you get out of bed, but we both get out of bed. So to the audience, we're both getting out of bed. That's what's written in the script. You know, Jim, alarm goes off and he gets out of bed. Now what and why that human being gets out of bed for is entirely up to that human being. Right?
Right.
Action, in other words, the external result of getting out of bed can be motivated by an infinite number of things.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, the illusion that's being created for an audience can be motivated by the performer based on his own life to create the illusion of a story that's being told day after day, night after night, or if you bring that onto a set to motivate a particular moment in a script. You're bringing your own understandings into a moment and receiving and utilizing the canvas of that particular space and time to bring it to life based on how you understand it. Now, you know, the story might be saying, hey, there's a bunch of zombies running around here, and all of a sudden they have an epiphany with some higher entity, and all of a sudden they're not zombies anymore, right? Something as absurd as that. Well, god darn, a lot of people will go to the darn movies to see that silly movie, right? If the people bringing that thing to life can give it a life based on their own ability to utilize the environments that they're working in effectively, we will sell that idea. So action is abstract, and this is a very, you know, non-linear approach to what people think acting might be. They might think, you know, you get to pretend or become something else or somebody else. Well, I've yet to see that to date. Whenever an actor, an aspiring actor, comes to me and says, well, I love acting because I get to be somebody else. I'm like, oh, really? Want to do some acting for me right now? I want to see you become somebody else right now. Okay, ready and action. Okay. Either I'm not seeing it right or you haven't changed, but I still have you in front of me. So the artist has, or the aspiring, delusional aspiring actor or artist, the delusional one, the one that's not there yet, has these delusions of grandeur that they somehow get to live the part of the superhero. That's not true when it comes to actually bringing that superhero to life for an audience. They may have a moment of alignment in their preparation, but if they're going to bring this thing together really effectively in front of a camera, they're going to have to actually utilize the production to create that for the audience. Otherwise, you're going to have a delusional superhero that's acting really badly, which can be quite funny if that's what the production wants to create, something farcical. A delusional superhero. That's funny already. Haven't seen that yet. Oh, maybe. There you go. There's an idea. Delusional superhero. I'm laughing already. But even playing a delusional superhero requires a real artist to utilize the tangible reality of the space he's in order to actually sell that to an audience so that they take that journey with that individual up on the screen. So your question is a little... Now, if you want to correlate that back to life, it all really depends on the level of being of the human being that's taking this journey, whether they're an evolved artist or whether they're not an evolved artist, whether they're an evolved human being or whether they're not an evolved human being. But if you start climbing up the evolutionary ladder as far as an artist goes, they must be evolved to a certain degree in order to create these illusions for an audience. And then what's interesting about an artist that's on that level is that their work and their life can be very parallel in terms of how they make decisions and how they create and shape their life relative to how they go about creating and shaping a moment for a film. As they become more evolved, the singularity is it becomes more evident. the less evolved or the newbies coming in have a huge separation between how they go about playing a part and how they go about living their life, even though they're equally as delusional. So it's an interesting measure. And so because of that, there's, you know, techniques for delusional actors, and there's acting techniques that actually create delusional actors, and then you have real teachers and real techniques that create conscious actors that can actually act, take action. And you'll notice that and then acting itself becomes a wonderful platform on which you can practice life without suffering consequences that life would typically serve you up if you were to be as assertive in life as you are on the screen or in the production. That becomes a wonderful basis on which to pursue the arts, because now you get to practice life without consequences and actually get applause for it and get paid for it, and then you can go back out into your life and you can exercise the extraordinary principles that all the arts bring an individual, and to craft your life. See, between action and cut, we try to realize the potential of a moment when we make a film. You know, dozens and dozens of people coming together to realize the potential of a moment that was written on a page within the context of the reality that they're working in. That's beautiful. Everybody's working to take so many people putting their extraordinary energy into trying to realize the potential of a moment. Well, that's the microcosm of life, right? So if you look at the big picture and you look at life, we're born and we die. Action, cut. And so you can take the same principles that it takes to realize the potential of a moment, and you can start to expand it into how am I going to realize the potential of my life. They're exactly parallel. And so these arts become the basis on which an individual could realize the potential of their life. They could parallel the success that they have in front of a screen or within the context of their art that they're creating to impact an audience out into their life and really become a shining light. And, you know, what we know about shining lights is that people like to be in the dark. So if you're a shining light and you're bringing that light into a room full of people that would rather be in the dark, it can be pretty dangerous. A lot of people start throwing stuff at your light, trying to put it out. But that's the risk that we take, and that person that carries that light, we call them an actor. An actor is simply somebody who can take action. Somebody who can instill consciousness and change and transition. And these changes and these transitions always bring with them a certain level of conflict if the people are in the dark. And you'll see different societies around the world that aren't in the dark. And so it's almost expected that the light walk into the room. And you know what? If darkness walks into a light room, light can absorb the darkness and elevate and heal and do all sorts of extraordinary things if there's an abundance of light. So culturally speaking, our society is so in the dark. They get really ruffled when a definitive light comes into the room, because they don't want to believe the light's there, and they are intimidated by the possibilities that come along with the light. But that's just what evolution is about. That's why there's revolution. And if you could say that there's a good thing about war, it's that it's an insane prospect war. It's a bunch of insane people just going at each other for absolutely the wrong reasons 9 times out of 10. But occasionally there'll come a revolution where the light is just trying to remain a light, and those that are trying to put it out hopefully don't succeed. And those are really interesting battles that we through history, and of course, you know, the insanity that goes into that is not part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. But you can see how you're taking this from the small stage to the big stage, right? Small stage to the big stage. If an individual can evolve, they can, if they so have the courage to certainly manifest it, at least in private in their own life, and be extremely effective. And if they feel like making it a public, making themselves a public entity, and decide to take action and insert themselves into a society that's possibly suffering, then, you know, they become a real actor.
Mm.
And see, throughout history, there's lots of real actors, and they had nothing to do with being on the stage, you know.
Mm.
But what's ironic enough, is that more and more people in the entertainment business are turning out to be leaders, turning out to be spokesmen for their people, turning out to be, you know, they have enough of an experience to sort of get a taste of what it is to influence people and, you know, put themselves out there in such a way where they have the courage to speak their minds. It can be sobering, you know.
Absolutely.
Anywho.
So
that's what we do.
That's what we do as artists.
We attempt to. We use ourselves. Keep in mind, we're not in an illusion to create an illusion. Artists are in reality creating an illusion for an audience.
Right.
We are in reality creating an illusion for an audience. We can't be in an illusion to create an illusion.
Of course.
And it's always, you know, it's always the, you know, the idea of the magician. You know, the magician knows his own trick.
Right.
He's creating an illusion for an audience. And it's the same thing when you're making a film. It's the same thing when you're making a great play. It's the same thing when you're creating a great dance. It's the same thing, a great painting and a great person, is that they have to be here 1,000% directing our attention in an order, that in a sequencing that creates a particular type of a result. And that's how our government is set up, and that's how a good society is set up, or conversely, that's how the bad ones are also set up. You know, it's a particular sequencing and influence that can be put out into the world or put onto the stage to influence an audience so that whomever is doing that can get what they want. You know, that's why magicians are so darn special. That's why a great filmmaker, a great actor is so darn special. Or a great dancer, a great athlete, because they're all functioning within this realm that's seemingly unattainable for those that are watching. They can feel it. They can take the ride with the performing artist, but they can't do it because there's this other extra element, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's three definitive phases in being able to be a performer. And this is what, you know, the civilian audience doesn't quite get, is that you may feel that character. You may feel that you can do it. But then there's a whole other phase. You need to be able to embody what that character has going on. And then you must, in order to turn it into an action, you must be able to share it. And it's the sharing part that makes the arts what they are. That make the artist so darn courageous, because he can share it. Anybody can feel that they understand it. Some people can embody it, but not everybody can make that next step to sharing it, to getting it out into the world, into the objective reality where it's being experienced. And that's what makes, that's the difference between extremely mediocre and great. That's why this journey is so fascinating to me. I just, you know, continually immersed in this cycling of evolution and result and recreation. Not imitation, but recreation. The biggest mistake that our educational facilities make is we'll read somebody else's book. So we're basically being trained to imitate somebody else's greatness as opposed to attaining our own greatness. And that's one thing to read a book or study something. It's another thing to create something in addition to what it is that you've studied. That's different.
Absolutely.
And this mirroring, and we reward imitation highly in the society. We reward the formatory dualistic mind highly. You know, those that can take tests well, we reward them with degrees and opportunities and a sense of elitism. When in actuality, you stick those poor overeducated bastards in the woods for a week and they're dead. You know.
How do you really feel?
Oh my God. You know, and here you have a native to a country who can exist in that world indefinitely and raise a family and raise a community out of what seemingly would be nothing. You know, they're not teaching that. Hopefully they will teach that more. I think action is actually having to be implemented into the future of education. It has to do with not just getting through a course, but the ability to lead the subject matter, the ability to captivate an audience and remain in a creative process, attributing and serving whatever capacity that they're moving into, whatever class they're moving into. They don't really give a grade for that. They only give a grade for the result, typically, but they're going to have to be able to discern the quality of the human being moving into the future of education. And they're going to have to start getting into, unfortunately for them, fortunately for everybody else on the planet, a certain level of ethics that don't exist in education right now because of this huge attempt to remove spirituality from education, which is a very dangerous prospect. You can't take the heart out of a PhD. If you do, you've just created a very dangerous person that's operating without conscience. We have so many of those out there. It's insane.
Yeah. So, can I ask you a question?
No. Absolutely. That's why we're here.
Yeah. Well, in listening to you and what you're sharing, it's really beautiful, first of all. But what I'd like to, ask you to share a little bit more of your wisdom on consequences, which you're kind of leading into right now with some of the things you're sharing, how we can digest, when we're with the arts and in a movie and feeling it. And like you said, to embody it would be the next step, and then to be able to share it. If you can articulate what the bridge is from the arts to the real world as it relates to consequence, and how we can integrate, process, and take the gems that we receive in those moments out into the world with us.
Well, there's that Zen saying, Dhanya Prajna Paramita, which simply means the wisdom to cross over. And that wisdom to cross over is really what a true education is leading to, whether it's an arts education or hopefully whether it's a formal education, which doesn't work, unfortunately. There's not enough there. It's partial. It'll have to grow up. It'll have to get there eventually. But the wisdom to cross over is there's no consequences to that. You know, if you're looking at it as evolution, consequences, we don't work to avoid consequences. We work to maintain a well-being. We work to maintain our natural condition of feeling good. We work for the benefits of life. The fear-based construct allows people to only think in terms of consequences. The reality is, on the other side of consequences, there are benefits. And until people start shifting that paradigm where they're realized that, hey, I'm not functioning here to avoid consequences. I'm actually functioning here to maintain my God-given right of feeling good and engaging my community and appreciating the world and the life around me. And we have to understand that consequences and benefits bookend our every action that we take. And the consequences and benefits bookend the rational mind and force it to make a choice. And that's what's beautiful about including benefits. But you only hear people really talk in terms of consequences, you know, how to avoid this, how to avoid that. It's a society of avoidance and the society of, well, it's influenced by the negative side of the imagination in terms of projecting into a space something that's not actually there. So every individual sits between, this is how we make a choice. We make a choice because we have consequences and benefits. And if you look at the choices that a lot of us make, we're insane because we're not honoring the basis on which maybe a choice would make us feel good, or a choice would allow us to maintain our health, or a choice would allow us to perpetuate prosperity, you know? But if you look at a choice, like let's say a person wants to fix a relationship. Let's say a person has unforgiven somebody, right? This is where the arts cross over into character study and character development. But this is a beautiful lesson for all of us in terms of what character analysis can bring to the table in terms of understanding who we are as human beings and how we make choices. Because every time an actor gets his hands on a piece of material, he has to make choices. He has to assess, he has to gain insight into the character on the page. He has to be able to make choices, embody choices, and share those choices within the space that he's in. So if you look at a character that hasn't forgiven somebody, and because they haven't forgiven somebody, their life has unraveled in such a way that negativity and fear has inundated their lives, right? Well, they would have had to affirm the negative every time that karmic circle came around and gave them the thought that I'm not going to forgive that person. Well, there's a certain level of insanity that goes on there if, due to my unforgiveness of a particular situation, my life has been destroyed. So we're conscientiously making those choices based on society's belief of what's right, as opposed to honoring what would actually serve us in a moment, right?
Right.
So here's what makes it insane. I'm feeling that the character, let's say, that has not forgiven somebody is feeling miserable, right?
Right.
So how they would like to feel, you know, within the context, how they like to feel. Well, they would like to feel justified, let's say, or they would like to feel empowered somehow, right? So they go about that by what? Antagonizing a person that they won't forgive. Putting themselves above an individual that they feel has done them wrong, so they want to make them feel horrible, let's say. Right? And so the action they may take to do that is to, you know, to continually send them hate and to make their lives miserable and to make them suffer, let's say that's the action. Right?
Right.
Well, the consequences of not taking that action to them is what? Well, they'll feel weak. The benefits that they think they're going to get from that is to feel powerful.
Right.
But yet the result of that is their demise, their own personal demise. But society supports that line of thinking.
Right.
Society says you should not let that person who did that horrible thing to you or your family go because they deserve to suffer. But who's suffering?
Right.
So that's an individual that's living in their consequences.
Right.
Right. That's a certain level of insanity to that. If you look at an individual who values the benefits of life, their well-being, feeling good, able to receive fresh information, appreciate what's happening, create on the go, get the most out of what life has to offer, that picture of that particular character flip-flops entirely. So let's look at it from the benefits perspective. Let's look at what could happen. Let's look at an appropriate action that could happen. So the person's feeling miserable. How do they want to feel? Well, let's shift that a little bit. How would they like to feel? Maybe at peace. Let's just say they've had enough. I want to feel at peace. Right? That's a natural, healthy want from an individual that's not wrapped up in this other type of a paradigm. So they want to feel at peace. So in order for them to feel at peace, when confronted with this other individual, how do they need to make them feel? If they want to feel at peace. What is their personal responsibility to that other human being that had done them wrong, at least from a political perspective or from a social perspective? What's their responsibility? This is where the tough choice happens. But this is the difference between their enslavement to a one particular incident from the past and their freedom into the future. They must make this choice on their own for their own well-being. They must come to terms and grips with the facts of how I want to have peace. What's my responsibility to this other individual that society has deemed wrong to me? What's my responsibility? Oh. Wow. Okay. Now it's getting deep. And now we have the storyline of any great story ever told. Now we have the edge that every human being has to walk to discern the quality of their own existence. What choice do they make in that moment in order to either free themselves or enslave themselves? Freeing themselves means that the benefits of their existence can actually come into play here. They can begin to exercise their potential. Enslaving themselves means that they get to exist in a righteous, from a righteous perspective. So, in essence, it's always going to come down to having empathy for the person that has wronged you, and to embrace them, and to let them, and to understand that there are suffering human beings wrapped up in circumstances that cause them to act in a particular way, and that because of that, I must embrace this individual, whether they embrace me or not. My perspective of them has to be one of love. Has to be. And so the action that's beholden to me to correct this situation is what? I have to let this person, know that it's okay. I have to reach out to this person. I have to nourish this person. I have to attempt to help this person. Consequences of not doing that are what? Perpetual suffering and misery for the rest of your life. The demise of and the never realizing of your potential in this body, in this time and space. The benefits of doing that? Wow, I get to put that behind me. I get to see things fresh. I get to eliminate the physiological destruction in my body due to my own improper perspective and improper use of imagination. Into the benefits I go, back to neutrality and balance and peace and potential harmony. So when you talk about consequences, you're in a really big boat, because most people are perceiving, or most people that reach out for help are suffering, right? And even,
right.
Unfortunately, the ones that don't reach out for help are, can be suffering, and then they don't get any guidance or assistance or whatever. But, you know, society has a lot of mechanisms in place to help us, and teachers in place to help us remind us of this very simple lesson of what that character analysis is about.
Hmm.
You know, there's lots of, you know, there's Buddha and Christ and Gandhi and all these extraordinary other human beings, Martin Luther, and all, you know, everybody that puts their ass on the line to work in that particular direction to get people to let go for the right reasons, for their own benefit, and to teach them the mechanism of forgiveness instantaneously, not just because it's the right thing to do for everybody involved.
Hmm.
So that's a big question you ask.
Yeah,
but
you
that wisdom,
beautifully.
The ability to go danya prajna paramita, or to give wisdom, to allow somebody to cross over, you're basically, and the goal of every role of every real teacher on the planet is to get to that perspective where an individual can value their well-being and the quality of their existence, not just because it's healthy for them, but because it now keeps that individual as a vital part of society and an example of what to do when things go horribly wrong, in order to get back to perspective and to allow that improper use of imagination to be held at bay as quickly as possible.
Beautifully said. A wise one.
Danya Parashna. It's ancient wisdom, and gosh, we all have access to so much information now that it's there for anybody to see. But once again, to understand is one thing, to embody is another thing, to put it into practice is a whole other thing. And that's what makes a human being that can conscientiously move forward and create harmony and balance within themselves, regardless of the circumstances, is a true actor. And that's why I love this particular pursuit so much, because occasionally, in and amongst my students, and occasionally myself, I'm able to actually be a true actor from time to time. And that's tremendously satisfying, and it's very humbling.
Well, Thomas, we're going to have you back.
nice. I didn't screw up.
To share more of
I'm so happy. I was a little worried there from the onset of your question. Like, holy God, everybody's gonna. Oh God, the shoulder of responsibility of what I just said.
Oh.
No, but I've been teasing. I love that responsibility. I love conveying it to people if I can. I love reflecting in my own writing and in my own directing, and I love it being reflected in my clientele that is currently out there doing the right thing most of the time, from what I can tell.
And it turns into
dollars and cents as well. If you can actually entertain that audience and you can evolve through your own craft, then wow, what a great job, right?
Absolutely. So we're going to put the links below, but if you can just orate your website, that would be fantastic. Where people can find you.
AAActingStudio.com. AAActingStudio.com. AAActingStudio@gmail.com.
Okay.
AAActingStudio@gmail.com.
Beautiful.
And of course, you know, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Ardavani, ARDAV, as in Victor, ANY. Please reach out and share your thoughts.
Well, Thomas, thank you for being here today. Really appreciate you sharing and seeing us through the crossover. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your platform. It's a rare platform for clearly all of us out on the fringe trying to make a difference to impact another potential audience. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
Once again, I want to thank Thomas for joining us and all of you listening in. Please connect to his work and his most recent movie below called Blood Initiate. And as inspired, please connect to the song that we led in with. It's going to be played in its totality as we exit out. It's by Crawford Redgate, and it's called Under a Thousand Lights, a beautiful example of how one person's connectivity to a moment can be translated into emotion, song, and prose. Until next time, this is she signing out with a full heart, a soft gaze, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply.
Everybody knows my name. Now I've got fortune and fame. Remember life when it was plain. Just getting by without the game. On the road or on the stage, it seems so good till you turn the page. Till you turn the page. Under a thousand lights, no one ever sees me cry. Don't you know that you and I are really so alike? Here I stand with my heart in your hands as I give all that I can under a thousand lives. Never change. Give and take, it's all the same. The smile I wear covers the pain. Someone else takes the blame. Another show is just a stage. It seems so good till you turn the page. Till you turn the page. Under a thousand lights, no one ever sees me cry. Don't you know that you and I are really so alike? Here I stand with my as I give all that I can under a thousand lights. The lights are bright. Where can I hide? Life is cruel. It's taking my lights. No one ever sees me cry. Don't you know that you and I are really so alike? Here I stand with my heart in your hands as I give. And I